Hello. Welcome back to a place for humans. Welcome back to a pack of zigzags. This bag, it is weed, it is me, it is Shanid, it to be the most meanest MC on the sea, on this earth. I've been cursed. Ooh. I should have been a rapper. Why am I wasting my time on YouTube? Lose yourself in the music. The moment you own it, you better never let it go. You only get one shot. Do not miss your chance to blow. Ooh. 313 is in the house. For the longest time, for the last like 4 or 5 years, I've had a California number. And just recently I changed my number. And I returned back to my homeland, to the 313, baby. Can we get a hallelujah?
You're not that guy, pal. Trust me. You're not that guy. Okay. Absolutely.
So anyways, today, you know, I was just watching some of my old videos, and I was watching this video that I did about 5-MeO dimethyltryptamines. 5-MeO DMT is a type of DMT, is psychedelic. Some people claim DMT is the most powerful psychedelic there is. It's very powerful. Oh God, I haven't had anything that's stronger. I don't know if I'd want to have anything that's stronger. But the 5-MeO DMT and the normal NN DMT are a little bit different in the experience. And I guess, like, I'm not a scientist, but structurally they're probably different. So 5-MeO DMT comes from a toad in the Sonoran Desert of Mexico and like the lower part of the US around that area. And it's such a, if you want to experience your funeral, then smoke 5-MeO DMT. Because it'll do that for you. You know, it's so ironic, actually. I didn't even do this on purpose, but I'm wearing the same shirt I was wearing in that video that I made. I just seen it pop up in my tabs. But I don't know, man. I don't even know what these experiences are. It's so crazy that most of us go through life not knowing that these experiences are possible. And, like, there's a lot of people listening to me that are, like, just don't even know what I'm talking about. But there are a small group of you, the initiated, that have taken that leap off of the mountain of the unknown into, you know, just the strange shores of the cosmic waters, the inner waters. Who even knows where those waters are? Are they the cosmic waters? Are they the inner waters, the outer waters? Is it all the same? These places that these substances take you to is so peculiar. Like, it has you using words like peculiar. I don't use peculiar in a normal conversation with my homies, but like, this is the only sort of vocabulary you can use to describe these sort of situations. It's very peculiar and it's very strange. And the 5-MeO DMT experience I want to talk about, because it really is like a funeral, and it's like you are dying. And I know I've had like what people call the ego death experience. And this is sort of the experience of when you don't have anything to reference. In Hinduism, this is actually the goal. In yoga, this is the goal, is to become a single-pointed center of awareness. To get all your attention, because if you think of our attention and our brain, it's just like a bouncy ball bouncing around in a room, just like, pew, 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 you know, one thing ricocheting off of another thing. We are hardly ever fully focused, if ever fully focused. But the, you know, this idea of yoga is to become connected, to become unified, in union, in sync with a single point of awareness. And well, ironically, you know, this toad venom, this toad excretion will bring you to this very strange place. And the ego death experience, which can be evoked through just life. It can happen naturally, but it can definitely be experience through psychedelics, and it happens a lot to a lot of people. You can look all over YouTube, Arrowhead, Reddit, any place where there's like a large form of people talking about these things. You can see this experience being reproduced over and over and over again in normal people. They're having what they're calling ego death, where they're lacking a reference point to their identity, where they realize, holy shit, I'm not my name, I'm not my body. All these things are temporary, and I know all those things are going to disappear, but where does that leave me? Where does that leave me? Because I'm not even this earth. This earth is temporary. Everything around me is temporary, yet I exist in an eternity somehow. Where does that leave me? And then some people awaken to a God-like state of consciousness where they're like, oh my God, I am the original source of everything. How have I gone through life playing this dramatic little me role when I am actually the source of creation itself? This flow that has been tiding itself, blowing in and out and in and out, just like a breath. Everything seems to be in this like on-off type of way, this in-out, tides come in, tides go out type of pattern. You sleep on your back, you sleep on your stomach. And yeah, there seems to be that quality to nature, doesn't there? And you see it in people. I was just talking about it in the last podcast I did yesterday, where I was like complaining that people should stop calling ayahuasca and different psychedelics or these shamanic medicines, which I kind of call them, I guess, which is also a kind of cringy term for an American to say. But I was like, stop calling it plant medicine, you hippies. But what did I bring that up for? I've been having short-term memory loss. But if you want to experience your funeral, smoke 5-MeO DMT. When I did it, I was in Yucatan in Mexico, in this little Mayan jungle village in just maybe like 30 minutes outside of Izamal. And it's not traditional there at all. It comes from the desert in the north, but it managed to make its way down there. And we did a whole ceremony. My friend was playing music. Let me see if I can bring up a little clip of that. And for those of you watching on YouTube, you can see. Okay, let's see, media source, locate file. I'm always like super nervous to share my screen because I always see those crazy memes where like, it's like my professor opened his laptop and it's like, you know, like student gets pounded by BBC teacher. It's like, oh God. Not that I would ever do that. I'm a holy man talking about a spiritual experience I had once. But it's possible for people to hack me, you know? Okay, let's see. I want to show you just a quick little video of me smoking the toad and talking about it a little bit. This is me actually. Okay, so just to give a little preface, the toad, it was discovered by a white guy, I think from America. He discovered it, and he wrote this pamphlet. I think I have it here somewhere, actually. Where's this pamphlet at? Right here. The Psychedelic Toad of the Sonoran Desert by Ken Nelson. Leave the Toads Alone. Choose sustainable lab produce 5-MeO DMT. So this basically explains how to extract it and how to synthesize it and all that kind of stuff. If I don't even think you need to synthesize it. It might have a synthetic equation in this, though, I'm thinking. this was redistributed by Hamilton Morris from Hamilton's Pharmacopoeia. It's very cool to have this. But there's a guy, his name is, what's his name? Is it Javier? Let me see, let me Google that. He's from Europe, Bufo Alvarius, and he's like one of the, I think he might be the first Bufo shaman. But he's got some very dodgy techniques, like he pours water in people's mouth while they're sort of traveling, and it's a very intense experience. You would not want water being poured in your mouth, you'd probably choke, which a lot of people do choke. He tases people. Very neo-shamanic, very untraditional. And anyways, he sort of got his okay. Oh man, I should know his name, because just so people don't talk about it, or not that people don't talk about it, but so people don't go visit him and end up getting you know, fucking electrocuted while they're experiencing God. Oh, I can't think of his name. What is his name? Let me see. Taser. Ufa Alvarius Taser. Octavio Redig. So he's this guy from Europe, Octavio. And so there's this indigenous group, which in this video I'm visiting them. About 10 years ago, Octavio went to go visit this indigenous group known as the Seri. And these guys live where the toad lives. And they're a native group that already had shamanic practices going on. And they've now included this toad into their indigenous ceremonies. And Octavio went there and got permission from the tribe to use the toad, since it's naturally on their land. And they have, you know, they're sort of indigenous people. And it kind of gives him credibility to do the ceremonies, saying, I have the blessing of these indigenous elders. They have since revoked his permission to use the toad. When I was there visiting him, they were like, we don't like the sort of way that he produces his ceremonies. You know, we think it kind of maybe lacks sacredness, or it's a little bit dangerous. Anyways, let's just watch a quick thing. This is me in their village called Punta Chueca, the Twisted Point in Sonora Desert, Mexico, with the Seri people who now use this 5-MeO DMT toad for their shamanic ceremonies. And this is me here learning about it and talking about my experience.
Right now, I'm in a small indigenous community in the rural desert of the Sonora. And I'm staying here in a village with people known as the Seri. And about 2 months ago, I took part in a ceremony in the Yucatan where I smoked the venom of a toad, or what is known as 5-MeO DMT, or the Bufo toad. And smoking this venom produces an effect that seems comparable to a near-death experience without being on the verge of dying.
But anyways, the experience, man, is like being at your funeral, because you leave all limitations of yourself, all these things that we go through life identifying as. I mean, even as simple as just being like, this is the air and this is my body. All these little tiny boundaries that we use to navigate life disappear utterly into nothingness, and you're just absorbed by this crazy light. It's just like almost what the Bible talks about, you know, or any of these kind of near-death experiences. Even is probably a better example. These near-death experiences that talk about things like, I was taken into the white light and I experienced God and I experienced transcendence and realization. And this is the same exact thing I experienced when I was on the sapo venom, the toad venom. And I feel like your body must think that you're dying. And when you die, or when your body is in the process of dying, it must produce this experience. Whether or not it's an evolutionary experience to sort of calm you at the time of death, I don't know how evolution would have produced such a strange experience to just like, you know, give you this spiritual experience as you're passing over. But the sort of clarity you get, which I experienced when I was on 5-MeO DMT, is unexplainable, which is ironic because I'm talking about it being clear. But you understand life. Like everything, politics, your own personal politics and your friend groups and your family and your community and this and that, your work, all these things, although are the center of our universe, we orbit, you know, our life orbits these kind of little pockets of our lives, become meaningless. And it's not that it's meaningless, it's actually super meaningful, but it becomes just so beautiful and so like nostalgic in a way. It's almost as if you died and you were watching your life play out and you were like, oh man, you know, I was just so naive and so beautiful in a way, you know, I had no idea. And it's just like, I loved that. And I cherish that deeply, deep in my soul, these experiences I've experienced here on this planet and here in this temporary short life that you and everyone in your life and me, we're all temporarily here. Each moment, you know, is leading us towards the inevitable of us leaving this place. And I think that there is a part of us that holds on to this experience that we've learned here as we make it to the next life. And I think we do make it to a next life. And my Sapo experience showed me that there is an afterlife. And there is like a place where you go before you take the next life, it seems like. Like this white light seems to be the place where you go back to remember. Everyone you love is there. Everything is perfect. It's just a light, but somehow you intuitively know everything is there and everything is incredible, you know? And your whole life has been incredible. Even the moments that you thought were mundane, boring, slugging your way around and heartbroken and poor and smoking cigarettes outside in the cold and all these moments, you know, that many of us are living right now, is it becomes divine. It becomes divine. And in this moment, at the moment of death, you know that. And it's undeniable. It's undeniable that your entire existence has been something of God. And that's such like a, you know, if I would have spoken to my high school self saying this kind of stuff, I would have been like, dude, you have lost the plot. But it's the truth. And it appears that nature is deeply trying to communicate this to us, given that it's found in so many different ways. So many different plants invoke these sort of realizations, whether it be the ayahuasca vine, to the DMT leaves, to the DMT toads, to the mescaline cacti, to whatever else is out there, you know. And in a way, you can look at meditation as this. What is meditation about? Meditation is about focusing on the breath. What is the inherent quality that is essential for us to breathe? It's the air. What is the root of air? Plants. All of these realizations that connect us to higher truths come from the plants. And this is what the shaman realizes, and this is why the shaman learns how to speak with the plants and speak with nature, not even just the plants, to speak with nature. And dude, I don't know how to fucking play this video for you guys. Okay, URL. At night, I think of you. I want to be your human. Yeah, whatever. I don't have to play it for you guys. Just know it's on YouTube if you want to watch it. Or it's on Facebook, Dakota Wint. YouTube, Dakota Wint. Toad Venom. But my friend, Selena, I was facilitating an ayahuasca ceremony in Mexico with these Peruvian shamans that were traveling there at a center called Arcana, the same place I had this experience. And my friend Selena was on ayahuasca, and the shamans were deep in the ceremony. They were all singing, like, you know, the shabibos, how they sing. It's when you're on ayahuasca, the shabibos sound like they're bouncing off the walls. That's how they sound. Let me show you. Mm-hmm. one's good. But sometimes, like, when you're in a ceremony, you'll have a couple shamans singing, and it's bouncing around. I forget what these shakers are called. Chacapas? Chacapas? But these, I don't think the Shipibos really use these so much. Or at least the ones that I've hung out with. But my friend Selena said that I'll actually play the shaman that was singing during that so we can just set the tone. This is Maestra Justina. And Maestro Arminio. So she said the same thing. She said that she was tripping. She was like, oh my God, is this my funeral? Am I dead? And she called me over to help. And she said, I think I'm dead. Like, I can't move my body. And she said, I understand what they're singing. And they're singing to me that I'm dead. She said, I understand what they're saying. How do I know this language? She said, oh my God, I'm dead. And when you're in the ayahuasca world, it feels like the spirit world. You're looking around, even though you're like in a dark room, you're looking around and it's all alive and it's all light. And you're seeing things moving through it. And it looks like... it really might be the spirit world, man. These plants really might take you to a different world. I actually am under the impression that they do. Hey, goosebumps thinking about it. These plants might be preparation for what we're preparing ourselves for. When we go through life just being consumers, when we go through life just being brainless slaves to a system that doesn't even benefit us, that benefits a small group of assholes that is completely disconnected from God, completely disconnected from the truth that we are in a mysterious universe, completely disconnected from our well-being. We exist to serve this small group of people that we call the elite. They have somehow gathered this title that they are not qualified to have. We are actually the elite. We are the ones that keep all this shit alive. But this, you know, us living in the system keeps us away from such deep truths about ourselves that make it impossible for us to be prepared for what we're slowly being pulled towards, which is our inevitable demise, our inevitable death. Demise is a bad word because I don't think it's a demise. I don't think we're going to lose something. I think it's, you can never lose anything. You can actually only lose what's not you. If it goes, it's not you. And that brings us back to that realization that we are it. Tat Tvamasi Sabek Todo es uno. We're all one. Everything is one in this world. Essentially, not that it's one. It's not one. That's the bad way to describe it, actually. It's that it's not separate. There is infinite variety, but it's not separate. It all needs each other. This is our funeral. Life is our funeral. Death is just a whole nother, is something new. This is the time that you're supposed to celebrate your life. What is a funeral about? Funeral is about celebrating your life. Because you're gone. And you know, you will spend more time being dead than you will spend being alive. You are already almost gone. Even if you're a baby now, 100 years is nothing in the scheme of infinite time. So your funeral is not far away, but we're unprepared for the afterlife. We are unprepared to be conscious at the time of death, which I personally believe is so important. You don't want to be drugged out and confused at the time of death. I believe at the time of death, it's important to be aware so that you can have this spiritual clarity I was speaking about. So we don't get confused and scared in these moments and cling to life and take some shitty rebirth or whatever the repercussions of clinging to attachment is. Baba Neem Karoli Maharaji said, if you crave a mango at the time of death, you come back as a fruit fly. So, you know, we must be focused at the time of death. This might be the whole purpose of the importance of spiritual practice, to be present. Yeah, it's hard to be present when you're in a room where you don't want to be, or you know, you're whatever the infinite things that are pulling at our attention. But it can be done through meditation techniques and through infinite things that people do, through art, through whatever your personal hobby might be. Everyone has their own way of getting into the flow. But how do we maintain that? How do we grab that so that at the time of death, we don't clinch? Because we can't be scared. It's who we are, actually. You know, it's like we just said, we will spend more time being dead than we will be being alive as who we are right now. This is a beautiful experience to be who you are. So it's so heartbreaking that people spend this existence being sad. And there's a lot of reasons to be sad. There's infinite reasons to suffer. But at the same time, on the other end of the spectrum, there's infinite reasons to be like, wow. All even amongst the chaos. Wow. Holy shit. How often do you have that moment where you're just walking through life and you just take a moment and say, oh my God, what are we doing? This is incredible. Like, no one knows anything. This is a spiritual experience. People sometimes say that quote, what is it? It's like, I'm not a human being having a spiritual experience. I'm a spiritual being having a human experience. And that's what my Sapo near-death experience told me. My toad venom death showed me that this life is not the foundation of our essence. This is just a blessing that we get to experience the material world temporarily. This is a temporary experience. You know, we tend, if you look at it from a scientific view, we tend to look at physics as being this eternal quality. They say, like, this is physics, this is how it works, this is how it all started. But that's because we are looking at it through a limited lens of perception. It takes so long that we don't have the proper data to determine what's actually happening. For example, they speak of this Big Bang that happened, that the universe was infinitely small, maybe even smaller than the size of a pin. And it exploded, and through time created the infinite planets and species we see around us, and suns and stars and moons and people and your life, your pets, your goldfish. Terrence McKenna used to say, give us one free miracle and we'll explain the rest. And also goes back to the one pointedness. Go back to the source. Meditation, psychedelics brings you back to that one pointed state of awareness, which is the source where everything comes out of. Ramana Maharshi used to say, trace the I thought. Trace the I thought to its source. Every time you have, I'm hungry, I'm this, I'm that, trace who that is. And you get back to this point where it's just a point. Just white noise. And all these sounds are being tuned in to that white noise. They're being tuned in like little radio stations. You know, we turn a little. Driving a car and then, oh, hello, nice to meet you, sir. Oh, this is my first job. Oh, congratulations, you graduated high school. Oh, welcome to your first house. And then you turn it a little bit more. Now you're an alien. Beep, beep. And then you're this guy.
16. You're not that guy, pal. Trust me. You're not that guy.
Okay.
Okay?
Are you?
Absolutely.
Ram Dass talked about that a few times, of the dials. The dials. Have you heard him talk about that? Ram Dass and dials. Or he called them channels, I think, actually. The channels of consciousness. Let's see if I can find a quick video to play about that. At night. I think of you. Da-na, da-na, na-na, na-na.
A television channel selector. Okay. And you set the selector.
Rest in Infinity, Baba Ram Dass.
He's
listening to this real quick.
Woman, man, old, young.
Okay, so he's saying on one level, you see woman, man, old, young. I was kind of talking when he introduced that.
Thin, fat, dark, light. You see the physical beings. You see physical entities. You see endomorphs, ectomorphs, and mesomorphs. You're a scientist. If you are full of lust, you would be on this channel. It's a channel in which you would see other bodies as whether or not they would fulfill your fantasies. So you would see everybody as bodies, and you would see there's a potential, there's a competitor, and that's irrelevant. And you would see everybody as one of those three. And that's the physical plane, that's what you would see. Just channel one. If you look at me, you see a 51-year-old bald man, Caucasian. And that's what you get on channel one. Probably irrelevant. Flip to channel two, Minnesota Multiphasic Personality Inventory. Now you see happy and sad. You see.
Channel two is the emotional
seeker,
level. Channel one is the physical.
Responsible, laid back. All the social roles, you see.
Social roles.
Responsible teacher, you see judge, you see politician, you see mother, you see child.
This is a brilliant way to understand the different level of perceptions if you're in psychotherapy, that we use to categorize our experience.
Nothing else is real.
This is Ram Dass in the 1970s.
Identity. Are on those two channels. Channel two is our storyline. Channel two is our psychological storyline, for the most part. It's the world turns. That's what channel two is. Where am I going? Where did I come from? Will I make it? I'm lousing it up. If I can only get over this, that's all channel two. Channel two, I'm a warm, affable, intelligent, charming teacher. Channel 3 is what we call the New Age channel. Scorpio.
The laughs of hippies from 40 years ago. 50 years ago.
Channel 3 is also our mythic channel. It's the archetypes. It's the, like I am the Buddha giving the sermon in the beer park. The room is filled with earth mothers and seekers after the Holy Grail. We all have these.
It's a 20 minutes long. That's 3 minutes of it. Ram Dass reality channels. It's a very interesting way, and just a way that you can sort of play with the way that you look at reality. You should watch the whole thing. It's really good. Level one, he said, and he's got, he talks about it many times and he explains it a little bit different each time. And it's so nice. Sometimes he talks about it as a TV and you're tuning in these dials, which is what originally made me think of that. But channel one is, what did he say? He said it's the physical way. It's the way, okay, I see this person. This person has these features. They're short, tall, skinny, big. Two is the social, emotional level. I see this person as, you know, this person's a chilled out person. This person is a teacher. This person is a police officer. Wow. Three, he said, is the mythical level. And oh my God, you know, Pachamama, Tonantzin, Guadalupe, Mother Mary, this world is the earth goddess. And, you know, there's some of this, whatever personal hippie beliefs you have or not have, traditional beliefs, you know, maybe it's not, maybe it's completely not hippie. Catholicism or Islam or atheism. This is the way that we view that part of the world. Anyways, I forgot why I mentioned that, but Ram Dass is always great to listen to, so shout out to Baba Ram Dass for everything, you know. Wow, what an incredible person that changed the world of spirituality, that changed the world of shamanism, that had this very interesting way of bridging, being a bridge. Harvard professor had a crush on one of his students, gives the students LSD, gets fired for it, travels to India, gives a sadhu LSD. The sadhu has no effect on him. Has no effect on him. This is the story. He goes to India. He meets this sadhu named Neem Karoli Maharaji. This Baba, this yogi that's living in the foothills of the Himalayan mountains. He gives him this acid, and he was calling it yogi medicine. This yogi medicine. And he pulls his pocket out and he goes to give him the acid, and he just grabs all the acid out of his hand and eats them all at once. And Ram Dass is like, holy shit, just half of that would have been enough to blast this guy into a different universe. He's going to, like, I don't know what's going to happen when he eats this much. I've never seen anybody in the world eat this much. So he's like, okay, well, he doesn't know the power of Western medicine. I just fricked up giving this, like, little village Baba some acid. But okay, let's see how this plays out. And he says he's just watching him. And, you know, maybe after an hour, he puts his head down into his blanket and just kind of sits there for a minute. And he pulls his face up and he starts making all these crazy faces and sticking his tongue out and making these noises like, ah. And all of a sudden, he just starts laughing. He goes, yogis have known about this experience forever. We have always known about this experience, but most people don't do the preparations to know how to navigate this space. But this is a profound space that can take you and put you in a room with Christ. So Ram Dass, who was named Richard Alpert at the time, a Jewish guy in India, on acid with this sadhu talking about Jesus. He was like, it can take you and put you in a room with Christ. That's what he told Ram Dass. And Ram Dass was like, what does that even mean? And then he pauses for a moment and he looks at Ram Dass and he goes, but it's better to become Christ. ¶¶ Something interesting also about him, he was a very interesting teacher, and I really appreciate Neem Karoli Baba, and I really appreciate Ram Dass again, but you know, a lot of what Ram Dass did, not all of what Ram Dass did, he was a brilliant teacher already before he went to India, but Neem Karoli Baba is definitely the source of the spiritual side of that. So, you know, you have to go to the source and give credit where it's due. When all these Westerners started flocking to India because Ram Dass exposed Neem Karoli Baba, they would all go to him. And for example, Raghu Marcus is someone I know very well. Raghu Marcus went to India and he went to meet Neem Karoli, and Neem Karoli Baba was like, oh my God, these crazy ass Westerners. Like, what did I get myself into? He was kind of rolling his eyes every time a new one shows up. And Raghu meets him, and Babaji, that's what they called him, Maharaji. He said, what do you want? In a kind of a way of like, what are you doing here? That's really what he meant. But Raghu thought he was saying like, what do you want? In a spiritual kind of way. Because he's speaking Hindi, so it needs to be translated. He's really saying like, what are you doing here, you crazy Canadian? Go home. But when it's being translated, he's saying, Maharaji's asking, what do you want? And he's like, oh my God, what a shit. This is my chance to ask that question to get myself enlightened. And he said, okay, I got it. How do you meditate? He's like, oh shit, I got him here. And he goes, how do you meditate? Just meditate like Christ. Get out of here. So he leaves and he goes out of the ashram, and all of the Westerners are kind of surrounding him like, what did he say? Anytime anyone new would show up, or anytime anyone would get to spend time with him, all the Westerners would want to know what kind of wisdom that they extracted from Maharaji. And they, what did he say? He told me to meditate like Christ. Meditate like Christ? What does that even mean? So Ram Dass was like, all right, I'm going to get him. We'll figure out what that means. You know, maybe a week goes by, Ram Dass gets him by himself and he goes, hey, Baba, you told that Canadian to meditate like Christ. How did Christ meditate? And, you know, the people that were around and noticed, you know, all started peeking their heads around to listen, see what he's going to say. And maybe I'm getting the story wrong. Maybe it was Krishna Dass. But anyways, he goes to say something. He opens his mouth as if he's going to say something. Maharaji, you know, he puts his hand up and his finger as if he's going to say, like, you know. And instead of saying something, he just kind of looks down for a second. He brings his head up a little bit. And a single tear rolls from his eye down his cheek. And he looked at them and he said, he lost himself in love. Christ never died. They don't understand. He never died. He lost himself in love. He lost himself in love. So I love these little answers he would give. There's another one. They said, Maharaji. Because, you know, they were sick of these little zingers that he was giving them. So they're like, okay, I got him. Because they wanted a practice. You know, you go to India as a Westerner to learn a practice. You know, tell me to give me a breathing method. Go put me in a cave for a week. Give me something tangible to grab a hold of. Losing myself in love, meditating like Christ. I'm trying to escape these traditions. Come on, man. Give me something here. Work with me. Work with me, Baba. So they're like, okay, I got him. Maharaji. Hey, Maharaji, how do you raise Kundalini energy? How do you raise Kundalini energy? And you know what he said? Feed people. So he was cool, man. He was great. And that's an amazing timeline to get sucked into. You know, read the book Be Here Now. Read these stories of Maharaji. Read the story of Ram Dass going to India. And it's so funny because I've spent a lot of time in these Neem Karoli Baba temples, and the Indians that go there aren't familiar with the Western story. They know him differently. They have their own stories about him as an Indian saint. But we have our own little isolated view of him, and it's really beautiful. And yeah, they said he has powers and stuff like that. And he could be in two places at once or all kinds of things. Who knows if any of that was true, but, you know, in India, it is true that, like he said, that yogis have known about that experience for a long time, the psychedelic experience. The Yoga Sutras, written by the father of yoga, Patanjali, speaks of the different methods of yoga that are bona fide for psychic clarity or spiritual realization. Yoga Sutras, Patanjali. I think it's actually the Yoga Sutras 4.1. Let's see if I'm right. Yoga Sutras. Means of, okay, this is the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali. This is the foundation of yoga. And this part of the book is talking about means of attaining experience. These three sutras explain methods of opening the barrier of veil between our typical waking state of consciousness and the layers that are underneath, higher, or beyond. Let me just read a little bit to make sure this is the right thing I'm trying to talk about before we get too deep. Yep, this is right. Okay, so let me just read some of this. By following that process, okay, these barriers are constructed somewhat like a blueprint. A house gradually gets filled in from the ground to the foundation, to the walls, and then to the roof, so that stage after stage, layer after layer, our final construction as a completed human being takes place. Revising the process by removing the veil. By removing the process of veiling and projecting in reverse order, going inward instead of outward, self-realization arises. It does not mean dissembling the house, but it means tracing our awareness back through the stages of construction. Oh, that's cool. That's kind of like what I was talking about earlier when Ramana Maharshi says, trace that root of I. And this is way before Ramana Maharshi. Opening the gate of the self. Experiencing the eternal truth or self is a process of allowing the natural consciousness to flow forward, much like a farmer opening a sluice gate to irrigate a field. Rather than a process of further construction of a new information and identities, in other words, we cannot build or construct self-realization. We can only allow it to naturally flow forward when the barriers are removed. Ooh. Did you get that? So basically, there are ways to attain this. The fourth chapter of the Yoga Sutras is entitled Kaivalya Pada. The word Kaivalya literally translates to isolation. It usually is taken to literally mean like something like liberation or enlightenment. However, the way in which isolation is quite effective is an effective term in that pure consciousness or Purusha is now standing alone, separate from all manifestations of Prakriti, including literally all of the manifestations or swirls of all levels of the mind field. In Sutra 1:16, supreme non-attachment is mentioned as a stage beyond the many other levels of attachment. Sutra 432 explains how the primary elements called gunas have finished their purpose and recede in perfect equilibrium into that form which they arose. So all things that come out of consciousness will return to consciousness. And actually, they are not consciousness. They are always in consciousness. But these temporary manifestations arise and they return back to the eternal state, which is formless, which is unmanifest. These are aspects or byproducts of the process of isolation or kaivalya or pure consciousness, purusha. So the subtler attainments come with birth or are attained through, check this out, this brings back to the point of why I'm talking about this, herbs, mantra, austerities, or concentration. Herbs is actually called asadhi, I believe, is what the actual translation in this Yoga Sutra is. Asadhi or osudhi, which means something like light-filled herbs, divine herbs. Through janma, through birth, some people are naturally born awakened. Through mantra, which means like a sound vibration, through incantation, divine words, through spelling. Many cultures have come to this realization through prayer. So by focusing... Through focusing on certain vibrations, you can transcend that way. And I mean, you can just listen. Think about music. How does music sound sad? You know, the sound of a piano. Oh my God, it breaks my heart. Or how can a piano sound funny or happy or inspiring? It's because the world is made of vibrations. Our perception can be manipulated through vibrations, and sound is not the only vibration. Actually, if sound vibrates fast enough, it becomes dense, like a fan moving. You know, if a fan is moving fast enough, it starts to appear solid. Well, actually, all of the material world is like that, but it feels solid because it's moving so fast. It's actually the echo or the reverberation of the Big Bang. But anyways, the next one is tapa, training the senses or austerity. So this is like the yoga that we sort of maybe associate with normally, which is sort of like poses and this type of stuff, austerities. Sometimes you see people in India do extreme things like put their hand up and never put it down. Or they take a vow of silence, like that one man that I met in the cave. Samadhi, which is deep concentration. Samadhi, when someone is in like the deep, you know, like when you're sleeping and there's just nothing there. It's just pure, just nothing. Samadhi is like that, but it's invoking that through meditation. And then there is siddhas. Through siddhas, through attainments, through perfections. This is psychic abilities, psychic clarities that come through spiritual power. Through you going through your sadhana, you develop spiritual powers. You also find this in many cultures, especially shamanic cultures, cultures that use plants. You find in all of like the Latin American, they talk about brujos that use these plants to gain powers. And anyone that works with ayahuasca enough, anyone that works with mushrooms enough, anyone that works with salvia, with belladonna, flor pondio, toe, the infinite names, angel trumpet, datura, any of these plants you work with, henbane, you have to be prepared. But they will give you powers. If you work with them long enough, you'll develop very interesting abilities. So this is what I'm trying to say is this is in the Yoga Sutras. This is in the foundation of Hinduism, which has been absolutely stripped and destroyed, probably by the British. I'm not sure where it's been lost, but it's actually offensive to suggest this nowadays in most Hindu circles. I mean, there are tantrics in isolated pockets in different places that do still practice this type of stuff, mostly like Agori. I know there's some sadhus in Kathmandu, or, you know, it's mostly these tantric babas that practice, like, you know, like the left hand path, that really are diving into this stuff. But Hinduism is one of the first shamanic religions, and actually is the deepest shamanic practice I've ever seen in my life, and it's not associated as one. What is Shiva? Shiva is considered the first yogi. What are some qualities of Shiva? What are some things that Shiva worshippers do? They offer him Datura, because there's a story in which Datura grows from his chest. Datura, one of the most powerful psychedelics, maybe even more powerful than DMT. Scopolamine, I believe, is the psychoactive in Datura. All around India, people offer Datura flowers to Shiva. Some people smoke it for Shiva to enhance their meditations, to contact Shiva. And it'll definitely give you spiritual contacts in the same way that entities come to you in DMT and ayahuasca. It's the same with Datura. What else? Shiva, they all smoke weed. If you hang out with like these Shiva devotees, man, they're all smoking weed. Not all of them, but definitely, like, you know, like the ones that are out just like chilling in the jungle or the caves and stuff like that. They're all getting it. But of course, I mean, anyone, you know, those of us that are from the United States, we've been high. We've been high. We know what it's like. That shit blasts you off. Weed. Okay, imagine you are a meditation master. Okay? You know, some of us have very surface level meditation, and we've gotten to some interesting places. We're like, oh my God, you know, meditation's, you know, is very interesting. Ultimately, it's not about experience, but you can get to a place where you stop thinking, and then you come back, you're like, oh my God, I wasn't even thinking. I've never had a experience where I wasn't thinking. You know, that's like a very surface level experience people can have through meditating. Okay, so imagine living through that. That's what you just do. You're just like born in India. You live in a little village, and that's just what you do. You just meditate all day. Now imagine smoking weed. You would be flying through the astral world. And that's not even a joke. That's some real stuff. And only some people have discovered that. And I dare you to try. I dare you to try this stuff. Try it. You're going to die. It's not going to kill you. Try it. What do you have to lose? Because this, you know, might be... We might be having these experiences because we are symbiotically connected to the intelligence that is within nature. There might be an evolutionary reason why we have these experiences. There must be. That's what evolution is. There's no way of getting away from that. Everything has a purpose. So what is the purpose of this experience? You know, it's funny. Christians will say it's demons. You are being tricked by the devil. The devil comes as a beautiful man in the form of light, in the form of your desires. The devil comes in the form of a beautiful Sirenita, leading you into the depths. Maybe. Or maybe God is everything. Maybe the devil doesn't actually exist. Maybe good and evil is the result of our naivete of judging the universe. Is it evil when a tiger brutally kills a family of gazelles? When it kills a mother in front of its baby gazelle? Is it evil when you drink the milk of an impregnated cow artificially by a man that gives no fuck about his feelings? In a little tiny cage where it can hardly move its body, if at all? Is it evil when you've done things in your life that you would consider monstrous for other people to have committed? We've all done that. We've all done things in our life that we would hate other people for. I would not believe you if you said that, if you said you haven't. Because we all make mistakes. We're people. So, I mean, where is the line of evil? Is it evil when an asteroid smashes into a planet and kills everything? Does that mean the universe is evil? The fact that you are alive right now, you get to experience love and then have it all snatched away from you no matter what. Everything you love is going to go away. Does that make the universe inherently evil? That it's like dangling fruit in front of you, making you salviated with desire and then just snatching it away from you at the end and saying, here, enjoy the last moments of suffering. Kind of like what we do, you know, we just like feed these animals like pigs and stuff like that. A pig probably loves being fed all that junk food. And then they're all just in their own little world snacking, and then bam, we brutally electrocute it or something, or however way they kill those animals that you eat on top of your pizzas every weekend. So I don't know where the line of evil is. I think it might be a human concept, you know? Russia versus Ukraine. Some Russians really believe they are doing like good work. They believe they're liberating people. Americans in Iraq or Afghanistan, we actually believed that. We supported that. Some people, you know, some people really joined the army like thinking it's noble, not realizing they're pawns in some political game. But I don't know. I mean, like, what am I even talking about? Anyways, guys. Oh, shit. I can't end the podcast on that, can I? You hear this? Listen. Oh. Oh, stop doing it when I want to show you. My nose has been whistling for like 6 months straight. I got COVID at the beginning of the year. And man, I'm like still not fully recovered from it. It's been like 3 months. I'm still coughing. My lungs are like still not recovered. Okay, how can we end this podcast? So yeah, if you enjoy this podcast, please check out more of A Place for Humans over on Spotify, Apple Podcast, anywhere that you listen to podcast. Check me out over there and subscribe. Oh my God, I'm about to sneeze. And if you're over on Facebook, please follow me on Facebook, Dakota Wint, like winter minus the part. Same with Instagram, Dakota Wint. I'm verified on there, so you know which one is me. What else is going on? I got some retreats coming up, October 10 through 16, 7 days, October 20 through 26, seven days in Mexico, con mi, en mi, y tu, amigo Tom, tu amigo Tom, your mate Tom, de YouTube, he will be there also, your mate Tom, and me will be hosting a retreat in Mexico in October. I'm pretty sure Tom's coming. I'll definitely be there. I'm pretty sure Tom is planning to come. What else? That's 7 days with us. It's very, very fun adventure retreat. What else? If you'd like to support me, you can buy a t-shirt over at stayhappystayweird.com. You can use the code aplaceforhumans to save 10% off. I've got some hoodies on there. Stay Happy, Stay Weird hoodies. That's been my company that my mom now runs. So you kind of support my mom when you buy that. It pays her electricity bill and her part of her house payment. But anyways, Head over there. Support my mother. Stay happy, stay weird. That's pretty much it, I think. Keep on omen in the free world. Patreon. Oh, yeah, I got a Patreon. Patreon.com/DakotaWint. You can sign up there, too. I don't use it very often, but I would appreciate if you wanted to sign up. So, anyways, this has been another episode of A Place for Humans. Gangsta's Paradise, baby. Thug's Mansion. A place to spend my quiet nights. Time to unwind. So much pressure in this life of mine. I cry at times. I once contemplated suicide. And when I tried, but when I held that nine, all I could see was my mama's eyes. No one knows my struggle, only see the throne. I know when it's hard to carry on when no one loves you. Picture me inside the misery of poverty. No man alive has ever witnessed struggles I survived. Praying for better days, promise to hold on. Me and my dogs ain't have a choice but to roll on. Thug's Mansion. R.I.P. Tupac. Peace.